Welcome to this edition of the Vanderbilt University Health and Wellness Wellcast. I'm Ralph Topham with Work-Life Connections, EAP. I'm here today with Chad Buck. He's a psychologist, PhD, who's new with Work-Life Connections, EAP. And Chad, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
What's the specialty that you bring to the EAP?
Well, mainly, I have background in doing psychological assessment, but also I've done a lot of work with eating disorders and trauma recovery.
What are the eating disorders that we experience in this country?
There are three main categories of eating disorders. One that probably most people are familiar with is anorexia, and that's when there's basically a fear of gaining weight, and a person has lost a significant amount of weight. They may not be having their menstrual cycle, they may be losing hair. It doesn't have to be that extreme, though, in order to be anorexia. It's more about the fear of ingesting food. With bulimia, a person will eat food. They don't necessarily binge. That's part of what people think, but they may eat food and then they purge or throw up to get rid of it. It's often considered that people will binge, but what they do also, instead of just throwing up, they may use laxatives or excessive exercise to compensate for the ingestion of the calories. And then finally, there's what's basically called eating disorder, not otherwise specified, but most people will think of it as compulsive eating. That's actually the highest in terms of rate. To most people in the country, if they have an eating disorder, it's going to be compulsive eating.
How is compulsive eating different from my sitting here munching my M&Ms with peanuts or something like that?
It's a lot about emotional aspects of why you're eating. If a person eats in order to feel love or to feel comforted or to feel support in some way, or if they eat in order to make themselves less attractive or in order to build basically a cushion around them in order to keep emotions from getting inside, then the emotional quality is what is the determining factor.
With the holidays coming up, how does a person with an eating disorder function? I mean, you know, eating seems like such a big deal.
It is. It's a really difficult time for people with eating disorders. You know, the focus on food is very significant, but there's also a lot of family interactions. And often, not always, but often, eating disorders developed usually from experiences that they had during childhood around rituals, around food. For example, that every time you made an A, your mom made you a cake.
Oh, okay.
So when you have food associated with good behavior or with positive things, then a person may crave food in order to sort of fulfill that same feeling that they had when they were a kid.
So if I'm a family member and I'm watching the dinner table at Thanksgiving or a coming holiday, what might I look for that would give me a heads up that somebody's having trouble with an eating problem?
Well, there's a few different things that have to be considered. One, there may be people who aren't eating much, and then the other, there may be people who are overeating.
So separating between the people that are just stuffing themselves,
yes,
and the people that aren't eating anything.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there are people who are just dieting, I assume.
Exactly,
too. Okay.
Exactly.
So this could be complex.
It can be really, really difficult. And the thing is, people who, I mean, eating disorders are it's a disorder of secrecy. So a lot of people may not exhibit their behaviors during the meal, per se. It may be that at night they may secretly eat. When everybody's gone to bed, they finish off the pan of rolls or they finish off the turkey leg, and nobody knows. It could be that during the meal they pretend to put things on their plate, but they just move it around slowly. So it looks like they're eating and taking drinks of water, but they're really just sort of miming eating.
So one of the things, if I were going to pay attention to this, I would look at what's on the plate at the beginning of the meal and what's on the plate at the end of the meal and see if there's been some consumption there.
Yeah, if you have a concern, that would be a way to sort of check it out. The thing about it is, one of the major findings that they have in eating disorder research or treatment is that when people kind of police eating, it makes it even worse because that's when it becomes really secretive. It's when it becomes there's a lot of shame and worry about pleasing other people. And then there's a major element of control and whether or not they have control over what they do. And if they feel like someone's watching them the whole time,
sure,
then it could trigger a whole different set of behaviors.
That's interesting. So it's complex not only for the person who has the disorder, it's complex for the family system around that person. So if I'm concerned, what might I do if I'm a parent or a sibling?
Well, one thing that you may do is save the comments for after the meal or when the meal's not happening. People who bring that up during a meal are just making it even more associated with the meal itself. So talking to a person in private, not making them feel like they're on display or that other people are paying attention. Just say, I'm concerned. I've noticed some things today, and I wanted to know if you need any help or if there's anything that's going on that you want to talk about. They may deny it, and most likely they will, that there's some sort of issue, but it's more about them knowing that you are available rather than them knowing that you have all the answers or that you're going to fix it.
And what are my options as a family member with that person? What are our options, actually, to say, okay, let's get an assessment or whatever? What do we do then?
Well, there are different avenues. There's multiple levels of care, depending on how severe the situation is. If a person is just concerned that they're maybe developing like a pattern of overeating, one recommendation would be to go and see a nutritionist. And they can talk with you about specific exchanges that you need to meet on a daily basis, or calories that you should try to hit. Now, the issue that often comes up is that a person who has a more restrictive diet, they're not meeting those exchanges. And then they feel like they have to meet all those exchanges, then they're going to get fat. And so that becomes the concern. So if there's someone who's kind of moving into that direction, simply meeting with a nutritionist may not be enough. So it might be good to have an assessment with an outpatient therapist. There are also different facilities that are available around the country and in Nashville that can do eating disorder assessments over the phone.
Well, thank you, Chad. I appreciate all that information. I'm sure our audience will too.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Please feel free to leave us any comments on this Wellcast by clicking the Add New Comment link at the bottom of this page. If you have a story suggestion, please email it to us at health.wellness@vanderbilt.edu, or you can use the Contact Us link on our website at healthandwellness.vanderbilt.edu. That health and wellness is all one word. Thank you again.